Welcome to the Wine Scholar Guild podcast. I'm Valerie Caruso, a wine educator and your podcast host. Today we're talking with Timothy Magnus of Magnus Vinum in Zurich. Tim is a Borgogna Wines official ambassador. He holds the WSET diploma in wines and spirits, and he will be teaching the Wine Scholar Guild's master level intensive in Beaune in May 2020. So today we're going to talk about Burgundy. Welcome, Tim.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad to talk to you today. I'm really excited to get to the class. But before we get into that, you mentioned in your signature blog and on your website that you're a wine academiker. Did I say that right?
Not quite. It's wine academiker.
Oh, wine academiker. So a wine teacher.
No, wine academic.
Oh, wine academic. Okay, can you explain what that is? Because it seems to be a very distinguished title.
Absolutely. So I moved to Switzerland about 13 years ago.
Okay.
And I finished my WSET diploma actually studying in Austria at the Austrian Wine Academy.
Very cool.
And in German-speaking countries, when you study for a long time and you study really hard and achieve a diploma, in German-speaking countries, they really like the idea that at the end of it, you get to have a title. So what the Austrian Wine Academy did was create the Wein Akademiker program, or the Wine Academic program, which is essentially the same as the WSET Level 5 Honors program,
okay,
whereby you finish the diploma studies, you have your diploma, mm-hmm, and then you write a research thesis and are awarded the title Wein Akademiker.
Okay.
Quite simple.
All right. And is that done in German then?
It's basically just German for wine academic.
All right. Well, that you just schooled me today.
Literally.
I love that title, especially for those of us that study our whole lives and love writing papers. So if you have access to that program, that would probably be a great way to learn if you learn that way, right?
It's a fantastic school in Austria. It's actually very famous in Europe. Yeah.
Oh, I've got to get out more. So what I'm curious about to get into Burgundy and work our way into this master level program, your passion for the wines of Burgundy, we're curious, where are those roots and how did it grow to be your region of expertise where you wanted to specialize?
So I grew up in Australia. I'm originally Australian. And I grew up in a family that was definitely very Eurocentric. My grandparents were from Europe, and growing up at home as a child, wine was always featured at the dinner table. It was always there. My father was a businessman, quite a successful businessman, and he loved to drink wine. He had a great cellar, but he was the kind of guy who let other people choose wines for him. And he didn't really know that much about wine, to be perfectly honest. But he did know that his favorite Chardonnay was Pellini Mauricet.
Oh my gosh.
So growing up as a child, obviously I got to taste a lot of different wines, also obviously a lot of Australian wines. But I did notice already from a relatively early age that there was a big difference between Chardonnay from, let's say, Australia and these wines from Pellini Mauricet. They were just so much more multidimensional and more expressive of something hard to describe. At least as a child, it was very hard to describe. And then later on in my life, obviously when I started to become, as a young adult, very interested in wine myself, I originally cut my teeth on heavy Australian red wines. But then gradually I found myself moving more and more to lighter, less alcoholic styles, wines with more acidity, and wines that expressed more sense of place. And obviously, when you sort of gravitate towards those styles of wines, it's a natural progression to discover wines from Burgundy. And it was that I sort of came full circle and started to explore Burgundy and discovered that actually this was really a feature of my youth. It was on the table served to me by my father.
That is so different than my upbringing. I can't even begin, but that's not why we're here. So you mentioned the Chardonnay and you mentioned cutting your teeth on more powerful reds, but Burgundy, when you get right down to it, a lot of people say, oh, it's easy. It's Pinot Noir and Chardonnay on claimed limestone soils. We get that. But yet it is one of the hardest regions of the wine world to study and to understand. So I'm kind of curious about the way Burgundy is divided up, or Bourgogne is divided up with the Grand Cru appellations. What is it that you find so interesting about that, which is quite intimidating to, you know, maybe people like me who haven't studied the master level Borgogna class? What is it you love about that? And is it fair that that complexity is still there all these centuries later for us to study?
I must admit that from a very early age, I was always very interested in things that were complicated and very detailed. I mean, I guess I have rather nerdy tendencies. And Burgundy is one of these places like Piemont, like Alsace, where the specific parcel is so important. And you can have a very small parcel of land lying directly next to another parcel of land, yet with small changes in exposition, in geology, the wines coming from these very specific parcels can be so different. And when I started getting into Burgundy, this was probably the one factor that really drew me in and I found endlessly fascinating. And then I started digging deeper and looked into the history of the region, and then to discover that more or less for close to 1,000 years, the monks who established the vineyards in Burgundy, established the individual parcels, spent generation after generation looking at the minute details of the resulting wines from each of these small parcels and separating them all because each parcel had a different thing to say in the resulting wine. This is something that I found totally fascinating. And it really is true that you can have a village wine next to a Grand Cru. And when you walk the vineyards and when you see what it is that differentiates the Grand Cru terroir from a village terroir that are literally right next to each other, it really does make sense. Burgundy is complicated. And of course, the French love to talk about terroir and make it sound very mysterious and romantic. And of course, in some respects, it is. When you walk the vineyards of Burgundy, there are really tangible, quantifiable reasons why there are these real bold differences between different parcels, different vineyards.
Is Poligny so different than Chassagne and Pommard so different from Volnay, and why? Could you tell us that story?
Absolutely. These are four appellations that I am extremely passionate about. Firstly, Poligny and Chassagne. They are built basically on the same bedrock, on the Pierre de Chassagne limestone, which gives them, in terms of their aromatics, a very close family resemblance. In terms of the fruit spectrum tends to be white and yellow fruits. They have this sort of white flower, very sort of acacia blossom characteristic. But what really separates them stylistically is the topsoil, and it's quite simple. Poligny has very little topsoil. You have basically vines planted directly onto the mother rock. So the wines are really fine-boned, very chiseled, less body, but certainly more minerally. Whereas Chassagne has a deeper topsoil with more clay, which makes them sort of cuddlier, softer, more body, with this sort of stony character that you get from the sort of deeper clay soils.
Now, am I remembering there are different water tables there too that kind of explain some of that?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Which is why you find very few underground cellars in Pilly de Marochet, because the water table is so high. Mm-hmm. Where in Chassagne, it changes because the soil becomes deeper.
That is so interesting. Now the reds.
Now, Volnay and Pommard, again, two neighboring villages, but they couldn't be any different. Poligny and Chassagne, they aromatically share a very close family resemblance, but Volnay and Pommard are completely different. When you walk and look at the Pommard vineyards from a distance, you'll see that the entire village is basically cut in two by a really large valley. And there still exists the remains of a much larger watercourse, the Avant Durne. Now, this tiny trickle of water is all that remains from a much, much larger older watercourse that actually ran down from the mountains. And as it ran down from the mountains, it carved out this valley and deposited debris on both sides of the valley. And what it brought down from the mountains is iron oxide. So In Volney, you have very little topsoil. You have, again, like in Puligny, vines planted more or less directly onto the hard limestone. And so you have wines that are broadly similar to Chambolle, very fine-boned, very aromatic, very feminine, very perfumed. Whereas Pommard, with this larger topsoil, with this large amount of iron oxide, these beautiful red soils, the aromatics, the texture, it becomes more earthy, more gravelly, if you will. There is a softness of texture, but it's somehow earthy. It's very, very comforting, like a long-cooked stew. They're beautiful wines.
I think that's one of the draws that I have whenever I see one in my wine shop. And my wine purveyor is very choosy about what he does stock. And he always seems to have a Pommard in there that I'll gravitate to. And I think that's what you said. It's this place you go in a glass. It's not so much an adventure, but it's a comforting place that I know when I open that bottle, I'm going to be happy with it.
Definitely. But if I might just continue for 1 second.
Yes, yes.
Burgundy being Burgundy, and of course being always complicated and always having exceptions, even Pommard cannot be so easily characterized simply. In Pommard, you have the southern vineyards on the Volnay side, which are actually even higher in iron ore than the northern vineyards close to Beaune. And the vineyards are more reddish in appearance. And this is the Pommard that you read about in the books, the firmer tannins, the real earthy character. As you head north towards the Beaune border with vineyards like Pezerolles, one of my absolute favorite vineyards in all Burgundy, and of course the fantastic wines from Epernon, you have much more terre blanche, paler soils, lots of active limestone, and these wines become extremely elegant, extremely fine. And if you taste them, they actually taste very little like the wines that you read about in textbooks.
Wow.
This is one of the most exciting things I'm looking forward to for the master level intensive program, is because what you read in books is one thing, but actually being on the ground and seeing the vineyards firsthand, seeing the difference in the soil, the amount of active limestone in the different crews, then tasting and then discussing it, you get so much more than just by reading a book. It's going to be a very exciting program.
And listeners, you can't see it, but his face is actually lighting up as he talks, because I can see him across in Skype land. So he's absolutely glowing talking about this. So you're in for an experience.
Thank you so much.
Well, since you mentioned the differences between the different parcels and how you can have a Grand Cru, you know, next to a table variety Bourgogne, we've talked about pricing a lot when it comes to Burgundy and wine production, and some of them are some of the most expensive wines in the world. So, as you've just mentioned, with, as far as terroir goes, there could still be a value for some of us who have a limited wine budget when it comes to Burgundy, correct?
Absolutely, Val. The last couple of years, I've also began importing wines from Burgundy, and my great pride was actually finding great value wines. I recently did a podcast, a webinar actually for the Wine Scholar Guild, talking about value in Burgundy. And when you look for value in Burgundy, there's a few different strategies that you could take.
Okay.
One of those strategies is, of course, at looking at the entry-level wines from established great producers. Of course, the great names, there's usually a reason why they're great names. They're usually great winemakers. Often they have great terroirs, which doesn't hurt. But if you look at the entry-level wines from a lot of these top producers, you can find extremely great winemaking for a reasonably fair price. Probably a more exciting direction to take, though, is to actually explore outside the Côte d'Or. Mm-hmm. There are such tremendous wines to be found in Chablis and Grand Auxois, in the Côte Chalonnais and the Mâconnais, that offer such tremendous value. And I think right now is probably the most exciting time for these smaller appellations. As the wines in the more famous appellations continue to get more expensive, people in the smaller appellations start to understand that if they step up their game, they too can achieve higher prices, which in turn justifies more attention to detail in the vineyards, more attention to detail in the winery. And there has been this knock-on effect of increasing prices in the Côte d'Or, that outside the Côte d'Or, people are much more serious in their viticulture, in their winemaking, and the overall quality has never been higher. There are also, within the Côte d'Or itself, a number of really overlooked appellations, the sort of the less exciting, less Hollywood kind of appellations, if you will.
Right, right.
For red wines, a lot of people seem so focused on Gevrey Chambertin, Chambon Musigny, Vaughan Romane, the rock star appellations of the Côte d'Or. But there's so much more to Burgundy than that. Also for white wines, there's life beyond Meursault and Puligny-Montrachet. So if you look at some of these smaller appellations like Orsay-Duresse, like Montély, like Marsannay in the northern Côte d'Or, there's so many exciting wines, and they can offer tremendous value for money.
You know, one of the first Burgundies that I ever really remember with a duck dish, and it was in Florence, Italy, of all places, was a Fison.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you never hear about it.
Fison is really enjoying a revival now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that has to do with the fact that one of the young vignerons in the village, Amélie Berthaud from Domaine Berthaud Gerbet, has become somewhat of a rock star in the last few years. There's been a lot of attention given to her domain and to her. Fair enough, her wines are gorgeous and she's extremely talented, which is great because it's given people the chance to look and pay more attention to this small appellation, Fison, which really didn't get a lot of attention before.
I think that's exciting because what a lot of listeners probably are looking for is like, well, wait a minute, where do I start? So if you know your Burgundy geography, then you can start going, oh, wait, have I ever had a wine from Marsannay? Have I ever had a Chambon Musigny or what have you? Is there a chance that I could maybe get a wine and recognize that place? Would you advise somebody to kind of go that way?
Definitely. So I'm a little bit of a map nerd.
Yes.
I love studying maps. I have so many maps of Burgundy. It's quite ridiculous. And so, for example, if you love, let's say, a Volnay Clos de Chêne, which is a tremendous premier cru in Volnay, there's some outstanding producers making this wine. But if you study the map, you'll see, I mean, okay, Clos de Chêne's exposed more or less perfectly to the east, but when it comes to the end of the appellation, the end of Clos de Chêne runs directly into the Montély Premier Cru Champfouillot. And, you know, the first few passes of Champfouillot before it starts to turn around more towards the southern exposure, I've walked the vineyard. It's basically the same terroir. It's maybe exposed not quite so perfectly to due east. But as you round this corner, if you look and find out who's farming these little parcels, you can find wines that cost literally a quarter of what a great Clos de Chêne costs. But in terms of terroir, you're very, very close.
Right. You mentioned walking through the vineyards of Burgundy. So this is kind of bringing me to this intensive that you're going to have in Beaune. Will there be any vineyard walking? Will people be able to get that sense of the map geekiness that draws people into things like this?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I'm excited about, a lot of things about the new program, but one of the things I'm particularly excited about is to be able to spend some time in the classroom with the students, pore over the maps with them, then go out into the vineyards after having pored over the maps and taste the wines. And I think when you combine those three elements together, then you can get Burgundy. To study Burgundy in a purely theoretical way, it's a bit dry, but if you see the vineyards, if you walk in the vineyards and then taste the wines with this reference of having actually walked in them, I think it makes a whole lot more sense.
I think especially for those of us who are maybe older, non-traditional learners, I'm an experiential learner and a visual learner, so I think that seals the concepts more when you're trying to learn something such as, you know, tasting a wine from a different appellation or understanding what makes one appellation different from the other and the different levels or the different quality levels. So talk to us a little bit more about this. This is going to be the first ever Bourgogne Master Level in Beaune, and it's in May. So can you talk to us? What's all going to happen in May? What can people look forward to?
Absolutely. So it's the Bourgogne Master Level Intensive Program. And it's called the intensive program because it really is a 1 week feet on the ground, fully immersive experience based in Beaune. We will be walking in the vineyards. We will be visiting some fantastic domains. We will, of course, have some seminars, some lectures, and we'll be doing a lot of tasting. And I hope by using the combination of these three elements, by, you know, walking the vineyards, visiting the domains, tasting, combined with the seminars, I think people will come away with a really complete picture and a really deep understanding of the region. Something that I think is difficult to understand when you're studying in a purely theoretical way.
Mm-hmm. So they should have the French wine scholar as a base.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
It certainly would help, and it's certainly a fantastic program. But I think anybody who's in love with Burgundy would have an incredible time coming onto the program.
Great. Okay, so it is going to be an advanced level. So how would somebody prepare for this? Just so I get there and I'm like not totally lost with my classmates. If I were the wine enthusiast, I happen to love Burgundy, but how would I prepare to make sure I'm tracking everything you're teaching in that class and pass the exam?
I mean, ideally, I think to get the most out of the program, people should have already read the course book before they come to the program.
Okay.
But to ask people to read the entire course book is a big ask. But certainly, I mean, people need to have a good grasp on the basics of viticulture and vinification, mm-hmm. so that they know the vocabulary coming into the course.
Okay.
Sort of the general wine vocabulary that you achieve through wine studies.
This way, like you said, you're going to be, was it an 8-to-5 schedule every single day? Are there going to be little practice exams and then one big one at the end, or they go schedule that exam later?
Well, we scheduled the exam for the afternoon of the last day, but there is the option for people who don't want to sit the exam on the last day to sit the exam remotely afterwards. Of course, for people who have, you know, studied in advance, know the book already, come in and sort of learn the extra dimension that you can by having your feet on the ground and through the vast tastings that we'll be doing, then of course they'll be ready at the end of the week to sit the exam straight away.
Absolutely. I think multidimensional learning is just such a great way to study a wine region, especially if you love it as much as you do, Tim. So that brings me to the last question.
Okay.
If you were a wine, what wine would you be and why?
Oh, geez, that's a tough one. What wine would I be? Well, I think it shouldn't be too grand a wine. So let me think. I think maybe I would be a Volnay Frémier.
Okay. Why would that be?
Well, it's a Volnay Premier Cru that's on the border of Pommard. It has a slightly redder soil because it has a little bit of iron in the soil. It's charming. It's easygoing. But there is actually a lot beneath the surface if you're willing to spend some time with it.
Oh, my gosh. That was such a great answer. And listeners, I hope that intrigues you to maybe sign up for this first ever Burgundia Master Level Intensive in the Heart of Beaune, as we talked about. Thank you, Tim, so much. It was so great talking with you today.
Thank you, Val. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And for more information on the Burgundia Master Level Intensive and any other programs, please visit wineschollarguild.org.